Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, not too much reality this time.
Little,
puppets of reality. Little tiny.
Yes.
We're talking about
paper samurais.
You bet. Kubo and the Two Strings. Directed by Travis Knight. And this is his first time directing, my understanding. But yeah, it's a stop motion animated movie. Yeah, it came out, in fact, it just came out in DVD, so it came out in 2016.
Yeah, it was this August, maybe,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a movie that I was captured by. I've seen it 3 times.
Wow.
And you are not as big a fan as I am.
Well, I saw it a few days ago, and yeah. It was fine.
Yeah.
Well, cool. It was okay.
Cool. Yep.
It looked beautiful.
Yes, that's part of it, yeah.
It was really
gorgeous. You know, yeah, there was a lot of really, yeah. It's almost a shame, you know, they used some CGI, right?
Oh, did they?
I mean, yeah, they have to, like, in some of the scenery. But I don't know for sure. I think all of the figures and everything are still stop motion.
It seems like it.
Yeah, as far as I know. But they used some CGI and some of the scenery and things like that when you know, there were some stunning frames that were just amazing.
There was this wheat field, I remember.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And this boat made out of leaves.
Yes. The boat made out of leaves is definitely real. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really astounding. It was really great.
That's cool.
Did they use, it's jumping ahead, I guess, mm-hmm. but so the origami stuff was that? That had to be CGI, I guess.
Wow. You know, I don't know the answer to that.
It was floating through the air and...
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I guess, yeah. I wish I could, because that's an excellent question. Because it is amazing. It looks to me like, you know, the figures, at least when they're finished, exist. But I could be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe getting them to that point is...
Right. And
that's, you know, I can see that, a blend of both the things to get the effect you want.
Right, right. As a filmmaker, you know, if you start going into CGI and then you're like, well, why are we doing this painstakingly tedious process of moving this guy's finger a millimeter and taking a photo?
Claymation. Yeah, exactly. Especially for playing the whatever that instrument's called.
Right. I have no idea what that's called, but that was cool.
Me either. Cool. We don't need to know.
That's right. So what the movie's about, it opens with a lady and a baby in a boat. Really cool scene there. It opens, if you remember, with a full moon, which is sort of how it ends, right? But the moon is representative of kind of the bad guy, right? It harkens back at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, in rough seas, and I think the first words are, if you must blink, do it now. You know, you hear someone say that, and, you know, you're seeing her hair float in the breeze and everything, you know. It was really cool. You could tell right then, okay, we're in a stop-motion movie, you know, because it has that certain feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you're on land and everything, it's like being in a diorama, you know, walking around in a diorama. And water, I have no idea how they do the water. But is, you know, maybe that's CGI. I don't know. And I wish I knew more about this stuff. But it looked really cool. And then she's running away from someone. And you're immediately told you're in a magical world too, because she has that instrument that we just talked about.
Right.
Should have looked up what it is, but she can strum that and the water parts, and she ends up on the beach with her baby, and her baby has had an eye stolen away.
Can you see that at that point? Because I didn't catch that until later.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in fact, they say that.
I knew it happened. I just didn't actually see it, so I didn't know.
And they don't, I don't think that they tell you who did it. But they tell you that his eye was taken, and they show his face, and he's got like a bandage over his eye.
Got it.
Yeah. And then we move forward in time to, I don't know, 8 years later? Maybe he's eight
I
years old.
I thought it was about 11, but okay. maybe that he could was younger. Certainly be. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know that it's said, but I don't, it could have. And he's taking care of his mom. And he lives in a cave with his mom. And his mom has clearly got some memory issues. She's definitely not right. And
And you say memory issues, but I didn't know if that was even her problem. She seemed catatonic almost.
Yeah, right.
He was having to sit her up. She wasn't even really blinking. He was having to help her. Like, he was feeding her.
Yeah.
And she could chew, but that was kind of it.
Yeah, and some of the animation that I just adored, there's a moment there where he's feeding her, and he drops a piece of rice on her chin, and then he picks it up and puts it back in her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just love it. Just loved it. So he's clearly taking care of her, and then he leaves her once the sun is all the way up, and he's got some origami animals, and one samurai soldier puts it all in his pack, and then he runs to town. And at the point he runs to town, the camera kind of backs up, and it's like it's showing like how separated they are from the rest of this community.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there living on this giant rock out by the ocean, and then he's got to walk quite a ways into town. And then, so anyway, I'm getting into all these details. We should probably do in spoiler territory, but what it's about is really, Kubo, you know, how much can we say that's not spoiler?
Well, I think what you could say is you do see him go into town, and everybody welcomes him. Everybody likes him. So he's not like the usual kid in one of these movies where they're kind of an outcast or a weirdo or whatever. He's well-loved, and he can do he has a special form of storytelling that involves origami. And at one point, he goes back, and his mother's more, you know, animated and everything. And so you learn a little bit about the fact that he's not supposed to be out after dark because something or someone is looking for him, and they will get him if he's out after dark. He can only go out during the day. And so, of course, the next thing that happens is he's kind of tempted by a ceremony that the townspeople are having, and he stays out after dark, and then all hell breaks loose. And then kind of the adventure, the quest, whatever you want to call it, really happens. So do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair, sure.
And then the rest of it is a quest of, well, we could talk about the quest, but the rest of it is a quest, which takes up the movie, so.
Right. Traveling along, looking for some stuff. But yeah, exactly.
With some people you meet on the road. It's one of those stories.
It's one of those stories, right. A road movie.
Right. A road quest movie. The hero's quest or something.
So, like I said, I was really captured by it. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to see three times.
Most people did.
Yeah. So then, if you just want to say what you'd like to say before we move out of non-spoiler, get into our spoilers.
What I liked, it looked good, and it was fine. It was, I had a lot of problems with the movie. So maybe, and some of those probably don't matter to anybody listening to this. But, I would say my thing with the movie is I never felt really connected to any of the characters, and I don't have to feel connected to characters all the time, but, the rest of it, if I wasn't connected to a character and caring what happened to them, then the rest of it has to be a little more interesting and complicated for me to be interested in the movie as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
For a kid, I look at this and go, oh, yeah, okay, I could see for a kid, you know. But I realize, and all three of us felt that way, none of us talked about the movie while we were watching. This was kind of what everybody said, that me, my husband, and then our daughter Rose. And so it was one of those things where I went and looked on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like they have 176 critic reviews or whatever, and five people didn't like it. So I went and looked at the five and went, yep, 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 yep. And so the things that they didn't like were the things, not all of them, but a lot of the same things that bothered us. So clearly we're definitely in a minority. And there's a lot of good stuff to talk about in here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's where you wanted to go,
sure.
But that's where.
No, that's exactly what we wanted.
So.
Okay. All right, sounds good. So yeah, let's talk some details. So if you want to see it without being spoiled, now's your chance.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
So cool. So yeah. So I was completely taken by the movie the moment that he went into town and started storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was completely in at that point, and I did identify with him. You know, I can't say it's a super deep movie or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I identified with Kubo, and I was right there with him the whole time. I think he's in every scene in the movie, other than the flashback storytelling.
Think so, yeah. Well, yeah, there's, you know, when he goes down under the water, he's not really in it, but there's just a few scenes like that. And so you cared about, you were kind of worried about him. You
sure.
kind of cared what happened. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I absolutely was. Yeah, as far as caring about him, I felt that he was a really good person from watching him, you know, take care of his mom.
Oh yeah.
And then and then when he goes into town and that lady, that old lady, I think voiced by the Brenda Vaccaro, yeah, I loved her too. She really touched me as well. And then but clearly, you know, they had some history together and they were talking, are you going to finish this story this time? And then mm-hmm. he tells his story, but is afraid or unwilling to go to the end. I know he doesn't know the end of his whole story.
Right.
But you could tell at that point, at least I could, even the first time I saw it, that was something to do with him. The story he was telling had something to do with his own personal story.
Yeah,
and
that's
made clear. It was, yeah, except for the chicken that with the eggs.
Well, and I would say that... Yeah. The first part of the movie, I also felt, I mean, I wasn't connected to him, but I didn't expect to sit down and go, I love you, Kubo. So that's something that should come with watching it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the first part of it, I was also very, very interested. I mean, I loved what they did with the origami and the storytelling. I was interested and I was like, why is the mother suddenly able to do all this stuff now that she couldn't do before? So I was into that. I liked the fact that the beetle looked like a samurai, and that we find out at the end that he actually was a samurai. And I thought it was a wonderful tweak of humor that they, when they stopped him, the sisters or whoever it was, stopped him from finishing his quest, that they basically took the real armor away and gave him fake armor as a joke. I mean, I just thought that was a mean sense of humor that fit them perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of things in it that I really liked like that. It was just once they got into the quests that I was like,
mm-hmm.
anything more? And so it kind of, after that is when it kind of fell apart for me, because nothing was upholding for me the promise of the first part. So
okay,
yeah,
sure, yeah. I can't say that I felt the same way.
Oh no, because you loved it.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Everybody loved it. I get right. that. I
yeah.
know.
Yeah, there wasn't any. I guess that's all I really need to say. I didn't feel the way you did.
Yeah.
But there were some things that I genuinely really loved, and so far everything that I've said is so far. But you mentioned the sisters,
mm-hmm.
that was spooky stuff. It was like in a rare way spooky
mm-hmm.
to me when those sisters came out and they're floating across the water, and strangely enough they're wearing masks in a stop motion movie, and then there was a point at which one of their masks broke off. And you could see the face underneath. But when they were together and their voices and the way that the whole mood of the scene completely changed, that's rare. I don't see that very often. And I felt really taken by that too.
Yeah. And especially the way that they were doing the thing that you see in a lot of movies where it's, you know, the relatives who... You feel like you should trust them, but you know that you can't trust them. You know, the evil aunts, or in this case, who are witches. And I didn't realize that their faces were masks until that one broke. And so you could see half the face. And I went, that's why their faces aren't moving while they're talking. I'm like, well, okay, dummy. Now you get it. Okay. I just thought because they were otherworldly that they were using telepathy or something.
Right.
I had no idea.
So, yes. And I thought it was cool. The scene where Kubo is running away from them the first night that he stays out too late. And the reason he stays out is because he's trying to communicate with his dad. Everybody's
right.
talking to their ancestors and he can't. I mean, we know now because his dad wasn't dead.
Right.
Right. Right. So he's sitting there trying to talk to his dad, and then he ends up staying up too late. But as he's running back to his mom, and his mom comes down, you know, from from the cave or whatever, and she saves him, you know, and gives her last thing. There's this, when she gives him wings to fly away.
That was neat.
Yeah, and then as he's pulling up, and the camera's looking straight down, and you see the mother rush towards the sisters, and the sisters rush toward the mom. And they, and there's like, you know, this big boom, and then the, and then that's the end of the scene. That that was something.
All white. Yeah.
That was something. When, you know, she sent him away, and then, you know, basically at that point you're thinking, well, the sacrificed herself and gave herself to save her son.
Yeah.
Very moved by that too. And the visual of it, just I thought it was gorgeous. It was again in was a rare way, really spooky and something else. So and, then oops, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No,
go
I was just gonna say, yeah, from there we get into the quest. Because he's there with the monkey in the snow at that point. And and I thought that was pretty cool too.
Japanese snow monkeys. So
yeah.
But I wanted to ask you something. When you were talking about, you know, they were doing the lanterns and he's trying to summon the spirit of his father. And as you said, I thought that was a nice touch that later you realize, oh,
yeah,
that's why you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But you've seen this three times. So at the beginning, you feel like, okay, there really is a presence there of the ancestor. And they're floating the little lantern away because the girl's like, I can see my grandmother, and here we go. And then toward the end, when it's the moon god and he's standing there and he's like, because we have the power of our memories, and all the lanterns glow and everybody's ancestors are standing next to him. And I'm like, wait, I thought they were real spirits. Are you saying now that they are just memories of spirits? Because that's how that's looking to me. And then at the end, I'm like, I don't know if you just... And he's standing there and his two parents are next to him in spirit form, I guess. And I'm like, I can't tell if those are his memories now or if those are real spirits because of what you did with this other scene where they didn't seem to do anything. I mean, you know, he's talking about memory and they all glow and come alive. And I'm like, well, now I'm confused.
Yeah.
Because Shinto wouldn't have it. They're not just memory. They're actual spirits. But you've seen it three times. So,
well, I never felt that way. I felt that they were real.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Like I say, that's what I thought. And then he said that, and I went, well, now you're telling me this, and they're glowing, so... Our memories make us strong.
Right.
Our memories of who we loved make us strong and everything, and I'm like, well, now...
Yeah, they're talking about memories, like, throughout the whole thing. And I know, you know, as a Catholic, certainly, I believe we are more than the sum total of our memories.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so... But I think that this movie sort of bears that out as well. I know you may disagree with me on this. So at the end, you know, we can go ahead and explain this. One of the things that happens to the bad guy, the main thing, I guess the resolution of the whole thing, is that his memory is removed magically.
Well, he becomes human.
Right. And he has no idea who he is. So it's like, okay, now this is a different person. And then all of the people in the townspeople start to tell him, hey, you were the nicest person ever. And you used to give kids coins and all this other stuff. And, I guess we can discuss that more, but I didn't feel like that was the end. You know, I know that's the end of the movie, but to me, I had no reason to believe that was the end of the story.
Well,
because of the evidence,
stories
of,
don't end.
Yeah, because of the evidence of the rest of the movie, where, you know, like the samurai, the beetle, right? He was like seeping out. His personality was seeping out of himself, even though his memory had been robbed.
Right.
And
which is why
the mother
felt like he was a samurai.
Right. Yeah. And the mother who had memory issues, right? They maybe at the beginning, you know, you were talking about that, but she definitely would be telling a story and then she would lose track and not be able to do that.
Yeah, the beginning,
anymore.
Right.
So she had these issues, but she was present. You know, there was something about her that was still there too. And then, you know, with the ancestors, it was talking sort of about ancestral memory and that kind of thing. But I do believe that the spirits were there. They were real.
Well, that's what I would have thought, because mm-hmm. I knew that they were kind of basing it on that culture. And I'm like, in Shinto, that would be a real spirit. But like I said, when he is suddenly talking about memory and those flare up, and I'm like, well, now, okay. And the other thing is the grandfather, since you went there.
Sure.
And and we've had a little discussion about this, uh-huh. but
it needs to be talked about.
Well, I have to say, this movie is kind of interesting to me because it's one of the few movies where I felt sorry for the three evil people. And I felt sorry for the grandfather because he had no memory and he was being lied to, but he had no chance to make a choice himself. This was inflicted on him. So his memory's been wiped out. He's being told all these other things about himself that are not true. Now, whether we approve of what he was before or not, this is what's happening. And I'm like, if this was being done to somebody else and it was a nice person and you wiped out their memory and told them bad things, we would think this was the worst thing in the world. So is it okay if you do it to somebody the other way? Are we not taking away his free will, his chance to make a free choice for redemption? Because no one ever tried to talk him into anything. Now, I'm not saying that you could at that point because he was clearly the bad guy. We didn't see him enough for anyone to ever talk to him, which I felt was a part of the problem with the movie too, but that's fine. He was just being fought and he was being horrible and fighting, but he didn't have a chance. And so I felt like that was intrinsically an evil act, even though it was done for good. And I'm like, what does he do? And I was literally thinking this while the movie's going on and they're going, and you are nice and you gave money to kids and you, and he does the thing which they did a lot in this movie. Instead of showing you something, they would tell you. So you go, oh, I guess I was kind of selfless. And I'm like, but what happens when his natural personality starts coming out and he wants to, I don't know, run things or dominate things and someone doesn't go his way? He doesn't have a chance to even know what's going on. He can't. He's going to have such a hard time reconciling that. And what are they going to do? Now, again, that's beyond the end of the movie. But I just looked at that. And this is a huge problem.
For me, the reason it wasn't a huge problem is also going beyond the end of the movie. Because, mm-hmm. again, I have no reason to believe that that's the end of the story based on what happened before. I think that he's still there and he's going to seep through and whatever they did is not going to last.
But do you think what they did was right?
Well, I mean, what's the alternative?
Because the movie is showing this as a good act.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, it was a protective act. I don't know that it was a good act. It was a protective act. But first of all, it's kind of a rare thing. It's not something that we see all the time. I mean, normally, what we might see is that the bad guy would be killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is that better? I don't know. He's made his choice.
He's made his choice.
So if they had killed him at that point, that would have been fine.
He's made his choice to still fight him. Everything he's doing is based on his own will. This takes away his will, free will.
Yeah.
It's been inflicted on him. It's not his choice anymore. That's my point.
But my belief, because of the rest of the movie, is that that's not the end. And I realize that goes beyond the end of the movie. His choices will prevail because they did for the other.
That.
I know, but I'm just saying, just like you're going beyond the end of the movie, I'm just saying that because of the rest of the movie evidence, the evidence of the rest of the movie, what it was saying about memory and who people are, it's not going to last. It didn't last for the Beatle. It didn't last for his mom.
Well, it lasted enough.
It lasted some time, but not forever.
Well, yeah. I'm okay. So, and that's why I'm saying, don't go beyond the end of the movie. What they did, I can't approve of.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the reason I felt sorry for those sisters, and they were awful. Mm-hmm. And I only started feeling sorry for them at the end because what happened was they're attacking and the mother, who is the monkey at that point, right? One at a time. And both of them have the same complaint. Both of them say, we idolized you. We looked up to you. You betrayed us. You betrayed our family and who we are, basically, when you made this choice. Okay. And they're evil. We know they're immortal, and they think being perfect is important, and humans are not perfect, so they're below them. And so that's another message of the movie, too. Humanity is flawed, but humanity is good, or it's okay, or whatever. It's preferable to being perfect and cold and alone. And I get that. That's fine. But no one ever stopped. The mother never ever stopped and went, let me explain. Let me tell you. She just went, and I'm going to kill you, or I just, you know, whatever. And she, and now you've seen it three times, and maybe there's something, but we were talking about it later, and it was like, she never went, but you don't understand what it's like to fall in love. It changes you. You don't understand what it's like to experience these things. It changes you. And in most movies, the reason those questions are being asked is because there should be some sort of an answer given, even if they don't accept it, and I don't think they would have. But they never, they were legitimately angry. I understood what they were saying. They never got anything back but silence and fighting and maybe a, you know, a sentence or two about, and I'll take you down. And then I was like, wow, that's funny that I disapprove so strongly of how they treated these bad people. Again, I don't know it would have changed them, because in that kind of story, obviously, they're not going to listen and they're not going to care and they're not going to understand. But they didn't have a chance. They were being told, they were not being told, you don't get the dignity of an answer. And I realize I'm putting a lot on this, but in most other movies, you get that somehow.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really have anything to say in return. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying. You're right. That's why I was surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's really, you're correct.
And I guess that's what feeds into my annoyance over the way grandfather was treated. Cause I'm like, this is just one more example of, we'll do it this way because this is the way we want to do it. You get no input into this at all. You don't even get a chance. Excuse me.
Yeah. And we're not shown stuff. And obviously there's a prehistory as well and all that stuff. And
Yeah.
But we're not shown anyway. It.
Mm-hmm. So now I've had my say about the poor, evil people.
Those poor evil people. Awful. Yeah.
Yes. They're pretty awful.
You bet.
So, sorry. I hijacked it. Continue.
No, that's okay. Where were we? Well, I can say some other things that I liked.
Yeah.
The skeleton with the swords in his head. That was like Harryhausen, right?
Yeah.
It was homage for sure.
It was like a nod to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Jason and the Argonauts, you know, a movie mm-hmm. that I recall seeing, on the weekends, you know, on TBS, mm-hmm. I think. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was cool. And I thought it was definitely on purpose.
That was funny, yeah, the thing with the swords where, oh, it's the sword, and you see all these swords in his head.
Right. But just, you know, the skeleton itself just is mm-hmm. so
No. Yeah, exactly.
And then I felt it was influenced a little bit by maybe Spielberg. I guess Raiders of the Lost Ark, I felt that a few times.
Yes, Indiana Jones.
Right, Indiana Jones-ish, you know, I guess the quest and getting these treasures, you know, it's going to be kind of an obvious connection.
Mm-hmm.
It also reminded me of Legend of Zelda. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's a video game.
Oh, okay.
Shigeru Miyamoto, I think. And then he did it with someone called Tezuka Takashi. Anyway, we used to play them a lot, my son and I. My son mostly. I would watch. He would play.
As a good father does.
But it was cool, you know, several iterations of these Nintendo games that really just had a super Japanese feel to them. Mm-hmm. And this felt like that. It felt like a video game in a way. Right down to fighting the boss at the end. You know, the boss turns into a big dragon and there's fighting in the dragon. You know, that's exactly what would happen in a video game.
Yeah.
But it just felt like that to me.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I've just felt, you know, those are some
of
the influences.
But that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's that one adventure after another thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah. I'm trying to think of what else to even say.
Would say that I did like at the very end where, believe it or not, where Kubo finds the two strings to put on his guitar.
The reason for the title, yeah.
Yes, and I went, the two strings. And my husband went, what? I was like, Kubo and the two strings. That's why it's called that. It's his father, his mother, and him all together. You know, the power of family, which goes along with another of the messages of the movie. And all these were good messages. I just feel like they should have picked one or two and wound the others around them more. I feel like they were kind of evenly distributed. So you're like, is this the focus on your power? No, this is the, you know.
Yeah. It makes me wonder how they operate. You know, so this company's Leica, L-E-L-A-I-K-A.
Oh, yeah.
So they've done a few movies now. So I guess you could compare them to Pixar and that. You know, here's a group of people that are making these movies. They're making, mm-hmm. you know, and there's, you can definitely tell their movies, you know. It's like you can tell a Pixar movie, but you can also tell a Leica movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder always how stuff works, you know, when they create. I know how it works in Pixar. I mean, the story is pretty much created, but it seems to me that they do tweak it while they go, because you always hear about calling the actors back, you know, for some more dialogue.
Right.
So, you know, so they work with these stories. I don't know how many years it takes them to do a stop motion movie.
Yeah.
You got to think it's two. I'm just throwing something out there.
At least.
I don't know, but.
Yeah. So long.
Yeah. So, you know, so maybe a year of development, and then now you've got a script and now you're doing the movie. And so they're thinking about this all the time for a long time, these animated movies.
Yeah, and I think maybe the feeling I get from, I've seen Paranorman. They did Coraline, which was really, looked really good, but that was Neil Gaiman. And that was, you know, a very good story. And I think to me, and I have no idea, but the feel I get is that they love making things look really good, and they have an idea for a story, but the story isn't necessarily the core of what they're doing. They're like, and here's a story, and now we'll do it. And I think they would benefit from having a couple people on board who that's focus on it in a different way than they're doing right now. Because I think of the story that Tom told me, and I think you read it too in the same book probably, about Pixar, where they were working on, it must have been Toy Story, but maybe it was A Bug's Life. Anyway, where Jeffrey Katzenberg from Disney saw it and he went, guys, no. And he pulls them all aside and makes them watch movie after movie after movie. And then they talk about story and what story really is. And so he kind of helped them orient early on how important the layers of story are, what you're trying to say, having the message and having everything build around it. And I don't think these guys either come from that background or have had the advantage of having someone who can kind of help them focus more. Because I think they have the tools. They just need.
Oh, they definitely more. Have the tools. They definitely yeah. have the tools.
Yeah, because it looks beautiful. And I just think they could, one more boost or two, and I would be going, yes, this is another amazing movie. But like, there were all these little things, like every scene did one thing. Most scenes in other movies do two or three things at the same time. So, for example, when his father teaches them to shoot a bow and he catches a fish, right? We go, that's great. It's a bonding moment. They're together. But, you know, in an ideal movie, he would have used the bow at the end and it would have had a deeper meaning because his father taught him or something his father said came back to him and he used the bow. You know, that's what you would have seen in Pixar or even Indiana Jones to make a joke work or something. And that's the storytelling craft that they don't, to me, quite have down yet if they want to make movies that speak to more than one audience consistently. You know, not just kids or not just people who love animation or not. So that's some of the stuff where I was just like, well, it was fine. It could have been better. Hmm. And every movie could have been better. But the fact that I can think of stuff like this is terrible.
Well,
I can always think of some stuff.
Almost huh? always. We can almost always think of some stuff.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, and I'm that's where I'm saying I'm not criticizing that scene. I liked it. It was mm-hmm. fun.
Yeah.
But it's like the thing of don't just show me the gun, shoot it.
Yeah, sure.
Don't just show me the bow, use it later. Why did he learn how to use it? There was more than just, they could have done more with it is all I'm saying. And that's what you see in Pixar or some of the other movies that are elevated some.
Yeah, so one of the things, I don't know what this studio's future is going to be. I don't know if you looked at some of this, but on IMDb, it said the budget was $60 million, and they made $48 million.
Oh, but I looked today and they said they made 69.
Oh, okay. I'm just looking on IMDb. That's what I'm reading. So okay. Good. So if they've if they've pulled in more than that,
yeah,
that's great. They say, and how did Paranorman do anyways?
You have to make twice as much as the movie in order to make money.
Yeah, all I know about movie money is from Serenity. Because I wanted it to do well so bad.
I know.
Yeah. So it looks like Paranorman broke even.
Okay.
So.
Bummer. But I think a lot of times for different money studios getting funding, sometimes that's okay for them.
Oh, is it?
But I don't know. But I think it's like, well, you didn't spend $60 million and make $10 million. You have a future. We can, you know. But I know that they put more money into the budget for marketing and stuff than usually shows up in the budget overall. Hmm. Like, I think half more or double sometimes.
So marketing money is included in the cost?
I think it's not included in those budgets.
Interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't think it would be, but...
Right, because it's an outside cost. It's variable and all that kind of thing. And that's why they say you should make twice as much, maybe? Anyway, a significant amount more so that everybody gets a profit and you have money to go on and do something else. But,
I see where you're getting that number now. Sorry. $69 million is right on IMDb. So I was looking at the USA number.
Oh.
Worldwide, $69 million. So they made 10.
That's funny. I would have thought it would have done more. Sometimes, you know, the international market can save things, too.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like if they've been going and... How did the Box Trolls do? I didn't see that.
Oh, let me see. Yeah. So the Box Trolls, that's one I have not seen.
I don't think it was well reviewed, but I don't remember now.
It's not a movie that I saw. See, Box Trolls... right there. That looked like it could be fun. And that came out 2 years ago, looks like. Mm-hmm. Not sure why it's not going there. Go to the Box Trolls. There we go. Ben Kingsley.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. They must have... An actor getting one of these gigs must be great.
They must enjoy it, yeah.
$107 million worldwide.
Oh, okay. How much was the budget?
60. All their movies cost $60 million.
No matter what it is.
Yeah, let's make a movie. $60 million.
Well, we'll just adjust based on those two things. I have to say, Kubo and the Two Strings, I liked so much more than Paranorman, which had to me. One message, and they hit it with a hammer every time they turned around. And from what I could read in the reviews, that's kind of what the Box Trolls did, too.
Oh, really?
You know, here's our one message. We will tell it to you all the time.
And I remember enjoying Paranorman, but I remember almost nothing about it.
Yeah.
So I would have to watch it again to even comment. But I remember liking it.
Yeah. It was popular.
Was it?
I think it was well reviewed. That's why we watched it. And I came away going, okay. So I liked this much better because they didn't do it as much. They did do a lot of telling you what to think, like, you know, instead of kind of revealing it in other ways. But again, like I say, I think they have so much potential. They just somehow they need to work with story differently. It doesn't have to be like Pixar does.
So they need a John Lasseter.
Yeah, or Brad Bird, or they just need their story genius to come in and kind of be the last part of the puzzle for them. Because this is much better, I think, than Paranorman in terms of...
Yeah, so the, you know, speaking of animated movies, you know, so I haven't had much time the last few days, but I'm trying to think, you know, what is the best animated movie I've seen this year? And, you know, so this year being 2016, for those of you listening to this way in the future...
Yeah.
Because surely 50 years from now, people will just be loving these.
We have to give it a context.
I'm thinking Zootopia. Finding Dory came out this year, too.
Oh, we did just see that. Uh-huh. Actually, we watched that a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
I did not like it as much as Finding Nemo, but it was enjoyable.
I agree. I would say,
To me, it was a lesser effort. Yep. But
So if I had to pick a favorite, it would be between Kubo and Zootopia. But I think those are the only three that I've seen that were new this year.
Yeah, see, I didn't watch Zootopia. I don't watch as many as, I heard it was, I heard a lot of people really liked it.
It was a hilarious movie. Oh, yeah? Made even better because, you know, we had one of my nieces lived with us for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And she is one of the characters in that movie. So oh. It was, it was okay. Just, it would just made it extra awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And she knew it too. She knew it when we saw it.
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, I have not seen, other than, I think, Finding Dory, I don't think I've seen other animated ones, because I'll see the trailers and just go, eh.
Yeah.
Like Zootopia, I was like, yeah, it's gotten good reviews. It does not look like a kind of, I just don't feel like watching that, you know?
Yeah.
But this movie actually did make me think of some other movies that are similar in the fact that, like, I didn't necessarily connect with the characters, but I really did like them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those is Spirited Away.
Spirited Away, yes. That's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really good movie. I never felt like super worried for the girl or for her parents, but it was so interesting. And the perils that, she, you know, and the adventures she was facing, Kubo is relatively passive in his quests. His parents do a lot of the solving for him until the very end, I feel like. You know, he participates, but he's not the main mover. In Spirited Away, this girl's having to step up and do all these things herself. And so that was interesting to see how things were going to work out. And so yeah. I really liked that.
And the most interesting thing about that movie was just the art. It was just something that you never see. So you watch it, and it was just amazing.
Well, and we rewatched it a couple of months ago because we own it and we hadn't watched it in a really long time. We sat down and watched it and I came away going, you know, that thing is just as surreal this time as it was the first two times I saw it. It's just like, it's nut bar, but it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still so interested the whole time. At least I was.
Yep, I was too. I was too.
And have you seen James and the Giant Peach?
I don't recall seeing that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Roald Dahl's story.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Randy Newman did the music. But that's another one where that's the one that came to mind in terms of being comparable for the little boy doesn't really change very much. And I told you I didn't feel like Kubo really changed much. We were watching the story, but he himself as a character was basically the same person he was at the beginning. You know, he didn't suddenly go, and now I understand this. And a whole new facet of his personality shows up. But James and the Giant Peach kind of does the same thing. But because of the adventures he undergoes with his friends, what he does is learn to understand himself better. It doesn't change who he is. But because he sees more about, he understands more about himself, he is therefore more confident at the end and can overcome the two evil people in it. And the animation it's stop motion animation and it is crazy good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I must watch it.
And in that one, I did care about James. Anybody who can listen to My Name is James being sung and not care about James is a monster. They're the Moon King. The Moon King.
Oh, funny.
And then Iron Giant.
Oh, Iron Giant, yes. That one I've seen and loved.
Yeah, and that's because of the grandfather, but because I was annoyed about the grandfather at the end, and I'm like, well, that's what happened to Iron Giant. But Brad Bird's interested in telling that part of the story, which, you know, this story was different, so they weren't going that in that direction. But I was like, oh, that takes my question about what happens when your memory's gone and the real you comes out. What do you do with what you've learned since then? What shapes you? And so that's kind of a real interesting question. I hadn't thought about that movie that way. So in that way, I'm glad I saw Kubo because it made me rethink kind of what they were, the big question of what they were doing with Iron Giant. So
yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that too.
I know. I've requested it from the library. There was a new Blu-ray that came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all this commentary because I think it's been 20 years or something. which is insane. I know. But Brad Bird did a new commentary, and they did an editor's cut where they, or a director's cut where they put in a couple of scenes that he had wanted left in that got taken out.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that's a good reason to rewatch it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just looking to see if my library has it. They do. Place, hold, place, place, place.
Push button, push, push, push.
I love it.
I know. The fact that the library has movies is just one of the most wonderful things in the world.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
While I decry the lack of reading, still applaud their, the movies they have for me.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, good. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. Well, do we have anything else to add about Kubo?
I think we've reached the end. I did like what they did with Monkey and the Beetle, whose name I can't remember. Maybe he was just called
Beetle. His name was Beetle, yeah. Until we found out who he was, yeah.
Right, but I liked what they did with him because at one point they're, you know, they're starting to kind of get a little flirtatious with each other, and I'm like, ew, really? I mean, I get it. They're just characters on the TV, but isn't it a little soon, Mom, considering you're now a monkey? And then you find out who they are, and again, it's the real personalities coming out of, naturally, they're attracted to each other because they were in love already. They just didn't know who they were.
Yeah, yeah, I like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that was a good detail.
Yeah, they had some wonderful things they followed up with, and one of the things that I thought I was really... Maybe I was putting my own expectations on this too, in the sense that when you see Kubo at the beginning and he's feeding his mother and going off and coming back and worrying about her memory and everything, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is fascinating. He's a caretaker kid. I know a couple people like this who are now adults, but they were the kids who kind of took care of the parents because the parents weren't really there for the kids very much.
Yeah.
And I went, well, I've seen kids with no parents, I've seen kids with one parent, but never, not that I can think of, and you can correct me, but not where they're a caretaker like this, where it looks like the mom's got some real serious problem. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to see, what should he really be doing? Are they going to show me a kid who's living the real life? Are they gonna you know, of course they didn't go in that direction, so I just kind of let it go. But thinking about it later, I was like, oh, that would have been so, even to hear the mother acknowledge what the kid was doing for her, or for him to say, you know, it was hard, but I don't mind, or just any acknowledgement of the fact that that was a tough situation for a little boy. And I wasn't really expecting it, but I was like, oh, they have been so imaginative to put this real situation into this epic mythical story that I'm gonna see. So
yeah, well, cool.
Felt like it was a lost opportunity, but again, that's me reading into what, you know, I would have, I was like, but you put this here and then you did nothing with it. Well, I wanted to see it.
I wanted more. Yeah,
right.
Cool.
I guess that's it. It was good enough, but I wanted more.
Gotcha. And understood.
So. Well, did it bother you? And I'm not usually like this, but did it bother you that the voices, except for George Takei, of course, didn't seem to be very Asian?
No. Okay. It didn't really. And I've read something about, you know, there's a little controversy there.
Oh.
Not enough Asians in your Asian movie.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, so.
No, I'm that person.
You bet.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand what the urge is, but I don't know. It didn't even occur to me to even think about it until I read that. I didn't have any idea who all the people were anyway.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, George Takei or Takei, I can't remember.
I mean, he doesn't sound like an Asian to me.
To me, he's so recognizable because on The Simpsons, which we watched a lot, he was, anytime there was an Asian, he was the Asian. So I know his voice pretty well from animation. So he, at one point, I think he was the father or somebody, he says something and we all go, oh, George Takei. And sure enough, there he was later. Mm-hmm. But we just know his voice.
Yeah, for sure.
And we love him.
Yeah.
But, and it didn't bother me, like the grandmother's voice didn't bother me, the kid's voice didn't bother me, but somehow the two parents always seemed jarring. And So finally I looked him up and I was like, well, Charlize Theron, she's fine. I'm like, but it was Matthew McConaughey. I was like, first of all, he didn't take his shirt off. So I lost.
His shirt was off the whole movie. No, he's, yeah. Well, Matthew McConaughey just has so much baggage. You know what I mean? He his voice comes with a lot of images that are already there.
I guess that's it, because yeah. He'd talk and I just find it kind of jarring. And we finally, since we were at home, looked him up and went, who is this guy? It sounds like it's Tim Allen or somebody, mm-hmm. but it's not. And I went, oh. And then what we could hear is he was kind of he was suppressing a little bit his Texas accent. And he was, and I'm like, that's why he's either struggling or it just sounds odd to us yeah. somehow. So, and that's when I started going, well, people didn't have to be Asian, but somehow those two people just sounded so white.
Yeah. To me. I know that this is something, you know, and I know that a lot of people disagree with me. You know, I am a white male.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's, you know, I hate the fact that we're counting everybody.
Yes.
You know, in the movies. Agreed. You know, we need to know how many people are here. And here's a movie that has too many men in it. Here's mm-hmm. a movie that has too many white people in it, period. You know, mm-hmm. it's, I wish we could just get past all that. And I realize that that's easy for me to say, being a white male, right? I can understand that. But I don't like being told how racist I am when I really, really try not to be. And, you know, people are going to make movies with people that they hang out with. And, mm-hmm. You know, this is just, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. But it's odd to me. But, again, I understand a little bit of it.
Well, and I do agree with you. Because when you said that, and I went, oh, I'm that person. I was like, but that wasn't why I did it. Because as a woman, I absolutely hate it when I'm like, oh, now it's always women only driving the cars while the men ride. And now it's only this and now it's only that. And I'm like, okay, it's too girl heavy around here. That's not how it works. You know, I don't feel like I need to see women doing things and girl power and blah, blah. And I had friends who were going, well, don't you want Hillary to win because she's a girl? And I'm like, that's the worst reason ever to vote for president. Okay. Because she's a girl or because somebody's a boy. And so I totally get what you're saying. And I was thinking about it and I was going, but Spirited Away, those voices were whoever they were, regular Western actors. I didn't mind. It didn't bother me.
And wasn't Spirited Away. Yeah. Noticed. Wasn't Spirited Away a Japanese movie?
Yeah. Miyazaki.
That was dubbed in English.
Yes. But you know, Miyazaki's theory, which I think is correct. So it's nice that I judged him correct, right?
Uh-huh.
The master. But he says, any voice you dub in, if you feel like it works, is right, because all animated movies are dubbed.
That's
true. They don't come with voices.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, my point was is that, you know, I have no idea who did the voices in Spirited Away, you know, but I don't need to count. I don't need to count. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I feel, you know, it's something about, you know, I feel awkward saying all this, you know, but it's just something that's out there. And, you know, I just don't see how we can get past all of it, because I really wish we would.
Well, it was like the thing I was saying last time, or maybe I didn't say it. I can't remember we talked about a book that alternates between a Chinese woman and a Caucasian man yeah. for the main character, yeah. right?
Yeah.
In the different books. And it's written, the man's books are written so authentically, but it's by a white woman, but so are the Asian ones. And people have said, I can't believe she's not Asian. And I'm like, you know, a lot of people would go, well, if it's not written by an Asian woman, how can it even be authentic?
Yeah.
And so that's the same thing. It's like that's putting an expectation that only certain people's experience applies to these things. And that's why, and so I'm sorry I brought it up, because I didn't mean it that way. It was just... Mm-hmm. To me, those voices sounded jarring when I'd hear them. They kind of shake me out of what I was watching sometimes.
Yeah, and McConaughey, you know, I can't say that he didn't.
Well,
but that's not an Asian or not Asian thing. It was This is a guy. This is a guy that was in, you know, several movies that I've seen him with his shirt off. But yeah, it was like, you know, trying to take that voice away from the memory of everything that he brought with him.
And I think that's probably it on a subconscious level. That's why it didn't seem to fit to me. And maybe that's also a matter of either the actors weren't directed well and how they're, you know, like when I said the two main parents, you know, just sounded so white. And I'm like, maybe they weren't directed very well in it. Or maybe, I don't know what else, because everybody else in the movie sounded good. And I didn't know who any of them were except George Takei.
Yeah. And I didn't feel that way about the mother at all. I never felt anything there. It was really just the Beatle. Yeah. All of the other actors were terrific.
Yeah.
I loved the voice of Kuvo. The voice of the old woman was fantastic. I really loved her.
I couldn't believe that was Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, did you know Rooney Mara did the voice of the sisters?
Yes, and I thought
that was fantastic too. I mean, it was awesome.
It wasn't Ralph Fiennes the moon
Ralph Fiennes, right? He was father. Yeah, he had that small part at the end. Yeah,
yeah, he was really good.
He's getting a good living being bad guy.
I know.
It's like we need Voldemort in here. Where is he? Bring him in.
The Bruges gangster.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope I didn't get us banned by my talk about race.
I totally agree with you, because the problem is then when you, it's a fine line, and I can, like you said, I can see why people do it, because it's, you're trying to make sure everybody's being considered.
Yeah.
But the problem is like you said, when you just start counting, then it's just as bad, because people are being chosen because of that, not because of their talent.
Yeah, and why isn't the reaction, look at these Caucasian folks who respect Japanese culture so much that they spent 2 years making a movie about it, or set in a, I know it was pseudo-Japanese, it was a kind of a Japanese setting, but it was a fantasy setting, really. But why isn't that the reaction? Why is the reaction, wow, there wasn't enough, Asian folks helping
you?
Yeah,
and I honestly didn't know about
that.
And
there wasn't zero, there was some.
Or I wouldn't have brought up my, my comment. So. Well, yeah, because nobody does that to Miyazaki when it's Castle of Cagliostro or, Kiki's Delivery Service. And those are European backgrounds that he's kind of crafted.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the same thing.
Sure. Yeah. Everybody wants work. Everybody wants work.
Yeah. Everybody does. And since we tend to watch those with subtitles, we hear the Japanese voices for it.
Sure. Yeah.
But
I like a good subtitle.
Yep.
You know, next year I should keep track more, like, what's the best animated movie of the year, and what's the best subtitled movie I watched, and all that. We could do some categories. Yeah.
Well, do you keep lists of the movies that you liked best?
Off and on. Yeah, this year was hit and miss. Every now and then it's like, you know, 3 weeks go by and I say, you know, I've watched a few movies since the last time I wrote anything in this list. But the thing is, if I could go back to myself when I was really young and give myself a notebook and just say, write down everything you've read. That would be such a treasure for me to have. So if you're a young person, just do that. Just, you don't even have to write anything about it. Just write the title in there.
Mm-hmm. Put the year and what you read.
Yeah, the year and what you read. I mean, that would just be cool.
I mean, read. Yeah.
It'd be cool. But I wrote down some, it looks like. And I'm just looking at it right now. I don't know. Arrival, I really loved.
I heard that was so good. Yeah. Was it true to the Ted Chiang story?
Very nearly. You know, the Ted Chiang, when I read the story, I felt that there was no way anyone's going to ever be able to make a movie out of that. It wouldn't even occur to me. But somebody did, and they did a really good job.
Yes.
It's different in the ways that it had to. It would be really, really interesting to talk about this with you and Rose, because the director made decisions in this that were major. And I'm just curious to talk to somebody who would know, you know, what he did and how he did it and why he did it.
Well, maybe we'll have to pick that next year, and And I'll get Rose to read the story because it's a short story.
Right.
And
but we'll it would be, you know, to me, it seems to me it would be a film school level thing. Here's a story and here's the movie they made out of it. What do you think of the choices that they were made?
That's the kind of thing they teach them or they talk about all the time.
I thought it was good. I thought they did a great job. Was it the story? Heard it was good. You know, close enough. I mean, impossible to do the story.
Right. Well, he said they got the heart. He said they got the heart of the story, the emotional core. So that's what he cared about.
I think so, too.
And now we saw recently Hell or High Water. Have you heard of that?
No. Well, actually, I have heard of that, but I have not seen it.
Yeah. It stars Chris Pine. Mm-hmm. So Captain Kirk.
Yep.
And Jeff Bridges. And it's a, you know, it's an indie movie. And I imagine Chris Pine went, yes. Let me show I can do something besides be Captain Kirk.
All right, cool.
But yeah, it's two brothers in West Texas whose land is getting ready to get taken away by the bank, who kind of pulled a reverse mortgage thing on the mother who just died. And they go around, they decide they're going to get the money to pay off this mortgage by robbing branches of the bank that pulled the shenanigans they feel on the mother. So but they don't want to shoot anybody and they don't want to, you know, hurt anyone. But so they're going around robbing different branches in West Texas. And at the same time, you've got Jeff Bridges, who is a Texas Ranger who's close to retirement, but he wants to solve this one. Huh. So he and his partner kind of start trying to figure it all out.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
That's a good bunch of actors right there.
Yeah, and it was really well done. It was interesting. It was kind of thought-provoking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely recommend it.
Cool. Well, good. I'm going to watch that, too.
Yeah.
I got a few movies to watch.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Me, too. And
Well, good. Well, all right.
Go ahead. I'm glad you picked it because I wouldn't have remembered that we need to rewatch James and the Giant Peach and the Iron Giant.
Fantastic. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I would love that. Yeah. I would love that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, okay. Well, it's time to wrap it up, I suppose. What is up next? Yes. A Christmas Carol. Picking a Christmas book for the end. For the end of this year. Yeah.
Yes.
So we haven't done A Christmas Carol yet, and I love it. I read it all the time. A couple of years.
Dickens.
Yes,
come
Dickens.
On.
And I picked this with your promise that it would not keep you from picking Dickens next year.
No.
So I still encourage it, should you have the urge.
I've committed. Mm-hmm. We are going to read a specific Dickens book that you want to read next year.
Fantastic.
And I've committed. It's on my list.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Good.
Doing it.
That
don't
makes
worry.
Me happy. All right.
Yeah. No, you can't stop me.
Cool. All right. So, Christmas Carol in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.